The following is a presentation of Open for Business, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship's conference for business students and business professionals at the Urbana 06 Missions Convention, held in St. Louis, December 2006. For more information, please visit ofb.intervarsity.org.
My editor, Agnes Lawless, we call her Flawless Lawless. She doesn't miss a comma. She and her husband in the 50s and 60s were missionaries with Wycliffe Bible Translators. Her husband, John, attended the second Urbana, before it was Urbana. And when she learned that I was going to not only be at Urbana, but also speak at Urbana, she was absolutely thrilled. And then when she said, well, what are you going to speak about? And I said, I'm going to speak about branding. I could just feel it on the other end of the phone, that there was confusion, and she says, why are you going to talk about cattle at Urbana? Well, the fact is, Agnes, I am going to talk about cattle at Urbana. For the very roots of branding come from the range. For millennia, ranchers have used brands not only to label their livestock, the way our parents label our lunch pails and our coats so they wouldn't get lost, but also to differentiate their cattle from the rest of the herd on God's thousand hills. Actually, we find cave paintings in Egypt, 4,000 years old, depicting farmers branding their cattle. Branding starts with a branding iron. And I think some of our nomenclature around branding is a little bit confusing sometimes, because we don't just think up a brand. We think up a branding iron, and then we have to take that iron, and hopefully it'll be a red hot iron, okay? Hopefully. They burn into the hide a lot quicker and a lot deeper. And then we have to burn it into the hide or the mind of the marketplace. And finally, once it appears in the mind of the marketplace, then it's a brand. It really isn't a brand until the market has it in their minds. At least the market you have in mind has it in their mind. And so we see all kinds of brands that have been imprinted in our minds. The most recognized brands in the world, these two, Habitat for Humanity, a very well-recognized brand in the U.S., and Urbana, an incredible brand that I'll talk a little bit about as time goes on. And now this new brand, Open for Business, which has been burning in our minds. It's a real clever brand. It's an effective brand. And I hope to tell you why in a bit. Before I go any further, I want you to know that I'm making some assumptions. I'm assuming that the products and services that we're going to brand and that we're going to market are meaningful, that they are meaningful in light of the creation mandate issued by our Maker, and that they are not inconsistent with the redemption mandate given to us from our Savior. That those who consume our products or engage in our services will indeed benefit from them, because they have been produced in concert with God's economy. Now certainly, the content of the package, of the deliverable, is what is most important. But the label on that package is also pretty important. Now, having made that assumption, I want to make an observation. As someone who has been in branding for a decade and preaching for two decades. And that is that good products and services share something in common with the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. And it is this: they do not generally communicate themselves. Here's what Paul said in Romans 10:14. But how can people call for help if they don't know who to trust? And how can they know who to trust if they haven't heard of the one who can be trusted? And how can they hear if nobody tells them? We are called to rightly or accurately divide or proclaim the word of truth about the gospel of Christ to the world. And I would submit to you that the same is true for our business aspects of mission. God may have given us a keen mind to think. and the resources to come up with some great products and services that deliver value, true value to the consumers, redemptive value. But if we don't accurately communicate that these exist and what good they will do to those that would use them, they probably are going to sit on a shelf. And I would suggest to you that is poor stewardship. Guy Kawasaki was the marketing guru that put Apple computers on the map. He's a wonderful Christian. And he gave me his card 15 years ago, on which his title said, Apple Evangelist. He told the good news of Apple. And so even as we tell the good news of Christ, if anyone is going to benefit from the good services and products we have, we are going to have to communicate the story. Now, I'm going to frame the rest of my thoughts this morning with a text of Scripture from the book of Ecclesiastes, which is a sermon preached by the preacher, if you read the New American or the New International Version. The preacher, or some say the teacher. I draw your attention to the afterword of the book, after the sermon has been preached, where the writer, the commentator, reflects on what made this guy's preaching effective. And I think it informs us how we can make our branding effective. Not only was the preacher wise, and not only did he have a great idea, a resource of value, a solution, not only was the preacher wise, but he imparted knowledge to the people. In other words, what was in his mind was not yet a part of the people's mind. But he took time to impart it to them so they would know the good truths and solutions he had in his mind. He imparted them in a way that could be understood by all who listened, and in such a way that they in turn could pass it on to others. Now, having preached for 20 years, I know that the book of Ecclesiastes is way too short of a sermon, and it's too powerful of a sermon to have come easily. You know the sermon that we heard the other night from the lady on reconciliation? One of the most powerful sermons I've ever heard in my life. And I want to tell you that she didn't think of that on the flight over here. That was a well-crafted sermon. Here's what the preacher did. He says, it says the preacher searched to find just the right words. There's nothing easy about this. And he set in order many proverbs. He was not unlike our Lord Jesus Christ, who used parables about runaways and poor widows and rich rulers. And with metaphors he preached, involving stones and bread and seed and sparrow and water and wind. And so did this preacher, if you read his book again. And by the way, I'd suggest to you, it really is, it's not only a business book, but it's a pretty good business book. Jesus knew, like this preacher also knew, that sometimes a word, one word, is worth 1,000 pictures. Yes, the preacher searched. There's agony in that word if you've ever been a preacher. If you've ever written a dissertation, you know there's agony in that word to find just the right words. Howard Hendricks, the great preaching mentor at Dallas Seminary, addressed a group of us would-be preachers once, and he implored us to understand that you should take whatever time you need to understand what a text of Scripture means, what God means by it in its context, in its literary, historical context, however long you need, take the time. And then take again as long, as much time again, to determine how you're going to say, what you're going to say to those people who come on Sunday to hear from God. Walking across the manse in 5 minutes doesn't cut it. He was looking to find just the right words. the concise words. He had no interest in wasting words. This last year, I had a fun flight. I fly a lot, and I talk to a lot of interesting people. And on this particular flight, I happened to be sitting next to Mr. Burns on The Simpsons. Harry Shearer, the voice of Mr. Burns. And we got talking about comedy. And I thought I'd test out a few stories on it. And we were talking about what makes things funny. And he said, he told me about Rodney Dangerfield and Jack Benny were his two mentors. And he said, I watched Rodney Dangerfield one time spend an hour trying to get one word out of a joke. Do you remember Tony Campolo's sermon where he stood up and said something like, in the last few minutes, 13,000 children have died, and that's my number one point. Number two point, most of us don't give a damn. And my third point is, most of you are more concerned that I said damn than that 13,000 died. And he sat down. Sometimes it's the brevity. Read Jesus' sermons. He's a master preacher. And his sermons were as short as some of the 2100 productions that we see. Powerful. So he searched to find just the right word. And in this branding process, I'm going to suggest to you that with all your ideas and all your solutions and all your good products and services, a great challenge you have is to distill the message in such a way that you can share it in as few words as possible and with as great a power as possible. Some people refer to this as your elevator speech. Have you heard of the elevator speech? If someone asks you on an elevator what you do, can you explain it to them before you get to their floor? And then he says, the words, the preacher searched to find just the right words, and he wrote what was upright and true. I'll come to that toward the end. And then it says, the words of the wise are like goads. A goad is a little stick that a shepherd would use to prod his sheep along. He didn't beat them with it. It was gentle, but it got the sheep to go where he wanted them to go. And the right words in your mouth and on your collateral and in your advertisements can prod people in the direction they ought to go. Their collected sayings are like firmly embedded nails. You can count on them and they're reliable. And by the way, they're given by one shepherd. I'll end with that in a bit. I have two companies, not because, don't be deceived by that. It has nothing to do with It has nothing to do with, I'm going to have to force quit here in just a minute. It has nothing to do with breadth. It has to do with branding. What I discovered is that what I did in the one company worked really well, but if I tried to do the other function in that same company, it didn't do well. People just didn't get what I was about. And so the first company, it's actually the second of the two, is the nomenclature company. Nomenclature has to do with applying names to classifications and to businesses and to sciences and so on. The nomenclature company, we help companies talk clearly about themselves. I like that word, nomenclature. It really has to do with how companies talk about themselves, but before that, it has to do with how companies think about themselves. As we think, we will talk. When we find just the right words, it helps us talk clearly about ourselves because we're thinking clearly about ourselves. Chuck Swindoll was addressing a group of us preachers once, and he told us, he said, gentlemen, if there is a mist in the pulpit, there will be a fog in the pew. And unfortunately, because there's a mist in our pulpits, there's a mist in the company. Out there in the pew where we have potential customers, there's a fog. But if we're thinking clearly and talking clearly about our companies, it helps others think and talk clearly about us. And catch that. Not just think clearly about us and buy into it, but also talk clearly about us to get others to buy into it. So nomenclature, or just the right words, has to do with names, sometimes called brands, taglines, terms, descriptions, claims, promises, ads, all the stuff of which branding irons are forged. I'm going to frame or outline the rest of my talk in two categories. I'm going to spend most of my time talking about effective branding, and which I believe is a matter of stewardship. And then I'm going to talk about ethical branding, which I believe is a matter of our integrity as Christians. So let's spend the next moments talking about effective branding. You know, we really do have the responsibility to do well with whatever God has given us. If you've come up with an office gadget, a computer mechanism, a piece of software, a language learning program, if you offer microfinancing or employment opportunities or healthcare or transportation or education, whatever it is that you have, the next order of business is to distill that into a name, to name it and to name it well so that you have a red-hot branding iron. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you how powerful a good name is. I come from Seattle, which was the epicenter of dot communism. And during those years when we were drunk on dot-coms, people were coming up with names that were red hot and then trying to think of something, a business to build around the name. Now, I can't say that I'm totally immune to that. My kids know that I love names and words, and they give me a bad time for it. But I actually have about 20 domain names that I own that I have a fantasy that someday I'm going to do something with. One of them is innercowboy.com. It's when your inner cowboy needs to go, you come to innercowboy.com. Now, that's got legs. I can do something with that someday, I know. You start with your good idea, but now you have to put red-hot words. How do you find just the right words? Well, the first thing that we need to ask is, what is it that we are really offering? Can you tell someone what your service is in that elevator ride? Car manufacturers know what business they're in. They're not in the business of selling cars. I mean, ultimately, that's what they want to do, but that's not how they talk about it. Volvo talks about buy safety from us, ensure safety for your family. Lexus sells luxury. Someone said that the Rolex watch people know that no one buys their watch so they can tell time better. It's a matter of luxury that they're buying. Toothpaste companies don't sell toothpaste. They talk about cavity prevention. Which toothpaste prevents cavities? Crest. We all know that, sure. And then there's whiter teeth. Another toothpaste, cavity's already taken, so the next toothpaste comes with whiter teeth, and then the next one comes with fresher breath, and pretty soon you have three or four tubes of toothpaste to make sure you're covering all the bases. World relief agencies are offering clean water, food, farming resources, legal services, economic development, fair trade, and all. But how about Hope International? Has those microfinancing program, and do you know what they're marketing, what they're selling to the people? Hope. Hope for Africa. And a good, solid response to AIDS. And the way they do that is with the microfinance. There was a company in Seattle that engaged my services two years ago, called the USA Yo-Yo Extravaganza. Okay? Now let me back up and just say, not only do we need to know what we're selling, but how is it different from everyone else? Okay? And the USA Yo-Yo Extravaganza, a group of Christian guys, about 12 guys and a whole cadre of staff behind them, they're Christians, and they're yo-yo pros. And they go to elementary schools and do yo-yo shows. And they are. And they're a bunch of yo-yos. But they said, you know, the name's just no good. We don't know how to talk about ourselves. It's it's not memorable, people stumble over it, they just refer to us as the yo-yo people. And besides that, that's not what we want to be known for. And so, truthfully, my job was that of a consultant. I came in and told them what they already knew. It's just they couldn't articulate it. So together we listened, and we discovered what they already knew. I said, what do you do? They say, well, our pros perform before over a million kids a year in elementary schools doing yo-yo tricks and telling a story about a little character named Ned. Ned stands for never give up, encourage others, and do your best. And in that show, what they do is they encourage these kids to never give up, do their best, and encourage others. And so they're all about character development. And they said, we just need a new name. Well, we thought about it. We said, how do we burn this into the mind of the people? And somewhere in their literature, though it was lost in the shuffle, maybe on a yo-yo trick sheet, we found a little guy named Ned. And we put a yo-yo in his hand and decided Ned would become the center of the whole thing, because that's the message they want to get across to the people. And we called it the Ned Show. Never give up, encourage others, do their best. But who were we marketing to? We had to market to the principals, because they're the ones that buy the show. And so we said, America's most popular school assembly. And they're all going, oh yeah, we're going to have the most popular school assembly. Now, we came up with some other things too. We said, promoting academic achievement, character development through promoting academic achievement through character development. And you know, the schools are dying for curriculum like that to fulfill legal mandates. And so we found language that would work with our people, that would differentiate them from every other assembly thing that came across their desk. And we had big folders with mailers that when they came in, Ned was sitting there. The head of Ned was staring at them. And when these guys would go into principal's office, they'd always see it in the corner. The principal liked Ned. So we were able to differentiate this assembly from everyone else, and with this simple little word, Ned, and the character Ned, burn that into the hide of the school place, and their assemblies have increased, their assembly invitations have increased dramatically, and they're doing a lot of good for a lot of teachers and a lot of children. We want to be the redwood in that seed of peppers. You know, I had a friend who had a stuttering problem when he was young, and he went to a therapist, and the therapist told him, whenever you start to stutter, stomp your foot. And he did, and he got over his stutter. And then he talked. And what we were able to do by distilling that message down to, we're the Ned Show, America's most popular school assembly. We teach kids about Ned, which means never give up, encourage others, and do your best. It gave them a way when they were talking to somebody about their business that they could stomp their foot and start with the right thing and branch off from there. You know, it's a good thing to do for companies when they have their employees and those who are most part of the company write down in a sentence or two what business they think the company is in. You try that sometime and see how disparate the answers are, and how difficult it is for people to know where to start. And so, how is the offering different from others is really important. You know, when God brought the animals to Adam to name them, it doesn't appear that Adam resorted to eeny, meeny, miny, and mo. As a matter of fact, if you read the text carefully, in the whole context of the book of Genesis, Adam spent roughly 100 years naming the animals before Eve came along. And God said, I'm going to give you a wife. And he says, I'm going to give him a wife. But then he brings animals to him to name. And what does he do? He differentiates all these animals. It's nomenclature. He's classifying them. He sees that some fly and some lumber along. He sees that some will be reined in and others won't have anything to do with it. And he starts to get the picture here that there are corresponding, that there are giraffes, there are zebras that are black and white, and pandas that are black and white, but they're not really quite alike. But Panda, there's a Mr. Panda and a Mrs. Panda and a Mr. Zebra and a Mrs. Zebra, and he gets all the way in and he says, hey, there's something missing here. There's not one corresponding to me. Enough to say that in the naming process God had Adam undertake, it was all about finding differences and similarities between one animal and the next. And that's what branding will require of you with your product. How is your product similar? How is it different? There will be times when you will not be able to find anything dramatically different about your product. Well, let's say you're going to sell water. Well, what are you going to do? I mean, water is water. No, it isn't. You're right. You've got Perrier water, and you've got Crystal Geyser, and you have Urbana water we had last night. I like the, caffeinated water. I'm thinking of marketing uncaffeinated water, decaffeinated water. Well, if the coffee companies can take a little cup of coffee and brand it, if Starbucks can get $4 out of a cup of coffee just because they brand it, they differentiate it, it's about the cup more than it is about the coffee. It's about the experience. Then we ought to be creative and say, okay, if we have a commodity, nevertheless, can we differentiate it with our packaging, with our name? And there are legitimate good ways to do that. A tree trimmer is a tree trimmer, in my opinion. But I looked up some tree trimmers, and the first one I saw was ABC Tree Trimmers. You know why they did that?
First in the
phone book. You got a business head up here in the front. First in the phone book. Actually, it wasn't. There was a AA tree trimmer before that. And there was a AAA before that. But you know what one was the most creative to me? Tree Monkeys. I go, yeah, man, those guys must have fun. That's crazy. I want them to come into my tree. Now, if they're afraid of heights, we got another problem. But Tree Monkeys, that's not a bad name. How do you differentiate yourself? There are ways if you will take the time to find just the right word. I think it was Makepeace. William Thackeray Makepeace said the job of the writer, and I'd say the job of the preacher and the job of the brander, is to make old things familiar and familiar things brand new. So we're taking a familiar thing like water and making it brand new.
Is that what Burger King did a couple times to try to reinvent themselves?
Who's that?
Burger King with that chicken, the chicken suit guy, the guy in the chicken suit. Is that what they were trying to do? Like,
I think so. Is that what Burger King tried to do? And I'll just tell you real quick my thought on Burger King.
Yeah.
If you have kids, where do you take them for fast food? Number one place, McDonald's. You can trust McDonald's to be a good experience for the kids. They'll be sick after and unhealthy, but they swing at all the stuff. So what did Burger King try and do? They tried to put playgrounds in the Burger King and make things fun, and it didn't work. You know why? Because the people who were trying to get away from McDonald's and the kids went over there and said, they're here too. What they really should have done, Trout says in his book, 22 Laws of Immutable Laws of Marketing, he says Burger King should have taken the slogan, grow up and eat a Burger King. So you see, you've got two restaurants. How are you going to market yourself? It doesn't mean kids can't come to one and adults can't go to the other. It means that you have differentiated yourself. You've become that red that red vegetable in a sea of green. Then we need to ask, who is our real customer? And right there you have it. Who is the customer? Is it the kids? Is it the parents? McDonald's isn't after kids. They're after their parents, but they get it through the kids. Right?
Yeah.
And so, you need to ask, who needs to understand our story? Is it a certain age group? Is it a gender? Is it a particular culture? Is it a government agency that we're really selling to, even though other people will benefit from the product? Is it the ultimate consumer? Is it some industry group in between? And then next, how do we find the right words for these customers? Words and concepts that your target audience will understand. Well, my other company, by the way, I guess we'll just go here for right now. We'll go there. WAA. Oh, I forgot what it means. I really did. But I can go next. Yeah, what about acronyms? Okay. What about acronyms? And there's the problem. I honestly couldn't remember what WAA meant. Okay? I do want to talk about acronyms, but I don't know how I jumped so far over to that. And enough for now. Let me just talk back up and talk to you a little bit how we need to talk in the vernacular of our constituency. My other company is the Neuenschwander Company. And the subtitle is, when you need to know about medication use automation. Is there anybody in here that needs to know about medication use automation? And I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. You're not my market. But I want to tell you, every director of pharmacy and every director of nursing in this country, and many in Europe and in India and in Indonesia, the world is starting to get that medication use automation can save lives because it prevents errors. And so my little tagline is zeroed in right to my audience, and it works rather well. Now, I have to tell you, I wasn't always called the Neuenschwander Company, by the way. I started out being Hospital Reports. And that's because I wrote a report about pharmacy automation. And I thought I was so clever, I made the R in reports a prescriptive R, you know, the RX. And it was so bad because nobody could pronounce it. They go, yeah, is this hospital Rexoports? Is this hospital RX Reports? And after a while, and I'll tell you later why I changed it. But enough to say for right now that the tagline did speak to my primary audience. There's a company in Seattle called Leisure Care. What do you think they do? Leisure Care. Take care of senior citizens. Who do they market to?
Seniors.
Ah, both. You have to market to both, don't you? Sometimes it's the son and daughter who are paying for it who are trying to figure out a solution. Sometimes it's the parents who just want to scale down and want leisure. So, boy, they did a real good job of identifying who they were selling to. The Bellevue Christian School in Seattle has a great name in the community. They were actually entertaining changing the name, and I said, that would be stupid to change your name. The whole world knows about that name. It's a very good name. But we worked on a tagline for them, and the idea was they wanted their vision to be understood not only by the students, but also by the faculty, by the parents, and by the community outside. It's a great school. I'm going to tell you, it's a Urbana kind of school, where you think about the creation and redemption beautifully balanced way, and all the world is God's creation. They teach kids there how to think biblically and not just swallow stuff in, and they give them tools for thinking over a long time. And we came up with the tagline, learning to think through life. And it ended up being a beautiful little tagline because it was ambiguous. Learning to think through this thing called life, learning to think throughout life. And it holds the faculty and the students and the parents all accountable for that mission. So, one more thing I'd say about this business of addressing our culture. And I've traveled to over 24 countries, but I don't want to pretend like I have much cross-cultural experience, and especially in business. The most I do in business is address Dutch pharmacists, and they know enough English that it doesn't matter. Obviously, if we're taking our products into another culture, we need to be careful with our nomenclature. There's the classic example of the Chevy Nova that went to Latin America. Nova doesn't go in Spanish. Pardon? It is a myth. You're absolutely right. It's a myth. They didn't sell less cars than they anticipated. They sold more cars than they did. But nevertheless, it points up the possibility that we could be saying something we don't really want to say. Many of you know Al Erisman, who's behind this, his wife Nancy over here. And Al has a brother in Sweden. Did he work for Electrolux? He just knew about this. But Electrolux had a campaign in the U.S., and they use their best English, and they know English well. And the tagline they came up with was, nothing sucks like Electrolux. Well, vacuum cleaners do suck, but that probably didn't work real well. You have to be real careful how you translate things, don't you? There was a sign in the Paris elevator that said, "Leave your values at the front desk." And I'm sure a lot of people have. But we want to be careful with the words. Okay, do you remember this? I want to talk about acronyms now, the problem with acronyms. Do you remember that? What? Man, you grew up in a different thing than me. That's a sign of submission, isn't it? When a kid wears a bracelet that says, "What would Jesus do?" No, it was a sign of rebellion when I was a kid. Why wouldn't Jesus dance? You can make things mean. Here's a problem that we have with acronyms. In the medical world, I have a friend who for the last 40 years has collected medical abbreviations, and he has 60,000 of them in a little booklet. And it's one of the major causes of medical mistakes in our world is abbreviations. The same abbreviation can mean 4 or 5 different things. And so if we are trying to gain mind share of the marketplace, we need to be careful with acronyms. The Institute for Business, Technology, and Ethics, Al Ehrlichman's organization, is in my hometown. Al's a very dear friend of mine. And he had a magazine called the IBTE Bulletin. Have any of you heard of the IBETE Bulletin? Did I say it right? Okay. I said, "Al, this isn't going to work, okay?" I said, "I'm dyslexic. I don't know if it's IETB or IBET or ITBE. Institute of Business Technology, I just had trouble with it." And he took my challenge, and he turned me loose on it, and I had a bunch of real estate in my mind devoted to this thing for a couple of weeks. And we came up with ethics. Anybody hear of ethics? You got it in your book. And there's a lot of people who are reading that and benefiting from it. And it's a brand that's beginning to burn. DARE. Anybody know DARE? Elementary schools across the country. What does DARE stand for?
DARE.
Drug awareness, resistance education. Drug awareness, resistance education.
Drug and alcohol.
No, it isn't. No, it's not alcohol. It's drug awareness, resistance education. Yeah. It doesn't matter, does it? Because DARE is a word. So sometimes if you have an acronym that makes a word and it stands on its own, you're okay. That's what I think about Medrics, a really wonderful little company in Seattle. And they're in competition for this $40,000 grant. And they take medical care and pure water to Southeast Asia. And Medrics just by itself is a pretty good name. When I saw what it meant, medical education development resource through international exchange, man, I couldn't repeat that to you if I wouldn't have put it up here. So that's okay that they came up with this, but in all honesty, when you come up with an acronym like this, you just have to assume that most people are not going to remember it, even if it's something as great as DARE. Maybe they never heard it in the beginning. If they had, they can't remember it. And so you really do want to be careful with acronyms. And yet people are really tempted to use acronyms. Generally speaking, starting with an acronym, in my opinion, is dipping your red-hot branding into a bucket of cold water. Then you try and apply it to the mind of the marketplace, and it just doesn't work. If you do use an acronym, it probably should be a word that stands on its own, and a tagline sure would help. You know, DARE, helping kids say no, or that's a cliche, but you get my point. A tagline certainly would help. And then sometimes you have to really be careful in your naming, even if you don't intend to use any acronym. You have to be careful with your name because people will turn it into an acronym. They'll do it in legal documents at least, but then they'll do it internally, And sometimes it catches on, and it's a really bad thing. Seattle Association for Theological Education, they thought we were a cooking class when we founded that. Sate. And so they changed it, because we weren't just Seattle, we were Pacific Association for Theological Education. Now it's Pate. We're still in the kitchen. And we said, well, what's our purpose? They said, well, our purpose is to make theological education available where it isn't now available. You know, right where we live, so people don't have to go down to Pasadena to go to seminary, or off to Deerfield, or down to Dallas. And we came up with koinos. Now, koinos is a Greek word that a lot of people in theological circles understand. It's like koinonia, koinos. It's common. And our theological education was for the common man, and we said making theological education accessible. And once we had that down, we were able to talk more clearly about our services. How about this one? I was in a business meeting with two colleagues, one a man and one a woman. They were partners. And he wanted to name our organization Pharmacy Management Systems. Now, aside from being a terrible name, because you don't understand it, my female colleague said, no way is a business going to be called PMS that I'm part of. And then, how about, I heard this on NPR the other day, National Association of Planned Land Management, NAPALM. I don't think so. If you do get to use an acronym, do you know what has happened? It didn't start as an acronym. It was sanctioned. It was baptized in an acronym by the marketplace. GE wasn't always GE. What was it? General Electric. 3M is? There you go. 1% of us got that. HP. That's new. And they're calling themselves HP now. I mean, they really are dropping the Hewlett Packard. But that's because they became such a common name to everybody that they have the right to do it. IBM. International Business Machines, right? GM. General Motors. So what I'm saying to you is that the better part of wisdom generally is to avoid the acronyms. And if you live long enough with your organization to be called IB instead of InterVarsity, maybe you're okay. But isn't it interesting that InterVarsity still calls themselves InterVarsity? Because it has a message to it that IB doesn't. Often the product brand is more important than the company name. Oops, let me back up. Do you know anybody who buys Procter & Gamble detergent? They don't. They buy Tide, Pampers, and Crest. They don't buy Procter & Gamble. Procter & Gamble's in the background. They don't care. They're branding their products.
Isn't Procter & Gamble also a cigarette company as
well? I don't know, to be very honest with you. We need to be careful when we're tempted to extend brands. Some people think that because a brand works really well and it's really well known, we can attach anything to it. I tell you who's drunk with this stuff right now is Donald Trump. He's got Trump Tower and Trump Magazine, and now he has Trump Vodka. And you know, someday he's going to Trump himself on the whole thing. But studies prove that when you dilute your brand with new brands, you end up losing market share in the mind of the world. A1 steak sauce, all of you heard of A1 steak sauce? I mean, it's the steak sauce, right? If I say steak sauce, the Sports Association, you say A1. They decided, hey, everybody loves this, we're going to make chicken sauce. So they made A1 chicken sauce. No one bought it. You know why? Because A1 makes steak sauce. Everyone knows that. So they should have come up with something else, like B5. Chicken sauce. Then it may have worked. I mean, how about Xerox cereal? I don't think so. And we could go on. Honda. Did you know that an Acura is Honda?
Yes.
A lot of people don't know that because they don't say Honda's not on there. It's a separate brand. It's more important than the country and than the company. And interesting, isn't it interesting to you? It is to me. how InterVarsity had the Urbana brand. They don't call this the InterVarsity Student Missions Conference. They call it the Urbana. They would just call it Urbana. See, at one time, it was the Urbana Student Missions Conference, or the Student Missions Conference Urbana. Then we all started calling it Urbana, and they had no choice, and they went with it. And they were smart, too. Urbana. It's nice to have the brand separate. That's why I separated my two companies. Not because I'm so big. It's just that when I said the New Richmond Company, people thought, oh, pharmacy automation. I go, no. I'm going to help you with your naming. They go, yeah, but you do pharmacy automation. So we came up with the separate entity of the nomenclature company. How about if Subway sandwiches decided to get into aftershave lotion? Subway aftershave. Chevron shampoo. You get my point. But a lot of times we think we can carry the brand over. Remember, what did Xerox become famous for?
Copies.
Copy machines. We actually used to call it, we're going to Xerox something. They don't sell copiers anymore. They haven't sold copiers for a long time. They're in other businesses. They got into computers. They got lost. They didn't know what business they were in. They took that great brand and diluted it to the point that we can't remember it. If you want to, oh, I shouldn't have put that up there. Just a minute. Okay. If you want macaroni and cheese, what brand are you most likely to get? If you want cream cheese, what brand are you most likely to get? What? Okay. Oh, what? Not you. Okay, the rest of the world. What's another one they're going to get? What cream cheese? Philadelphia. Do you know who makes Philadelphia? Kraft. Let's see how small it is right there. They were so smart to not, when they acquired Philadelphia, to not change it to Kraft cream cheese. There's too much equity in that brand. Some brands do need to be buried. FedEx and Kinko's merging together. I don't know if it's good or bad the way they have FedEx, Kinko. I do know that Airborne and DHL, when they merged, dumped Airborne and have just DHL, and now they have their yellow trucks with the big red DHL going all over the country, and they're burning into our mind. If anybody had a name that was 20th Century Media, they probably ought to think about burying that. I think that slide was out of order. Here's by the way, I called myself, you'd say, what a dumb thing, call yourself the New Richmond Company. No one can pronounce that. You know, talk about USA yo-yo strategy. Well, they couldn't pronounce Hospital Rx reports, but interestingly, they were saying, oh, that's the Neuenschwander report. Oh, Neuenschwander is a guy with pharmacy automation. And I found they could pronounce it, so I had to go with the marketplace on that. I changed the name to the Neuenschwander Company. Now, Jeff starts a business in the neighborhood as a young man, helping people with their computers. And he carries it on through college, and he makes this little flyer showing the house in the neighborhood, and Noosh Networking. Everybody knows Noosh. That was really good. And then reap all the benefits of your computer investment. Not bad. A little lengthy. Not bad. So Jeff comes to me. Man was laying on it. He says, Dad, you got any ideas? And we worked on it, and we came up with Noosh Connects. And by golly, it works. When Jeff leaves the business now, says Noosh Connects, he's turned it into a full-time, full-scale, successful business these 6 years later. And his tagline, very simply, he's about the business of connecting people with their computers. So if somebody's just getting onto a computer, if little businesses are doing it, but it's very succinct and very clear that he can explain what he does. And we put his picture on there because we felt, I did, that he's what they're buying. And in fact, he is what they're buying. Revise a brand with care. What candy bar is that? How do you know? How do you know? Because that brand's been around since you've been around. It's just they changed the letters on it. So there's the value of a brand that's been around a long time. Sometimes a mediocre brand that has endured the ages is better than a really great brand that changes every couple of years. And so if you're going to revise a brand, revise it with care. Quaker Oats was really smart with this. You see the Quaker Oats box and it has a little Quaker on it? Over the last 100 years, they have changed that little Quaker. They've updated him slightly 4 or 5 times, but not so much that you can notice it. I knew a minister that had a thing going on in his church where somebody donated the piano, and they wanted it over here, and he wanted it over here, and half the church wanted it there, and half the church wanted it there. And he thought, oh man, you're going to get in a big dispute over this thing. And he says, I want it over there, I'm going to get it over there. So he moved it an inch of Sunday. Nike revised their brand. You know, you do not see that word Nike anymore. That's what you see. Like Prince, only stronger than Prince, because they know that we know what that means. When we see that, our head says Nike. Differentiating with color. Let's do an exercise on auto rentals. What automobile agent rental agency uses green? National and Enterprise. Which one uses black and yellow? And we know which one uses red. And I'm telling you the truth that when you are walking in an airport to a car rental agency, all you're looking for is color. And you go, that's how powerful it can be. Coca-Cola almost owns red out there in the world. But now how about this product red thing? Controversial, good or bad, I don't know. I'm not going to comment except to say that is one powerful brand going on right there, all over the color red. They use the word and the color red. What color UPS? Yeah, it's not only the color brown, it's the word brown. They call the guy who delivers the packages brown. Hey, brown, good to see you. Incredible use of color can be incredibly powerful. So when you're looking at your marketplace and who else is involved, find out what colors are being used and use a different one. Who's using orange out there in the world? Vonage? Singular, Home Depot, World Vision, Sojourners. So if you're going to be in competition or in the same marketplace with any of those, you want to pick a different color. Create a category if you have to. Trout and Reese start their book on laws of marketing by saying it's better to be first than it is to be better. Meaning that Avis might have a better car rental agency than Hertz, but they can never be first because Hertz was first. And so if you can't be first, then create a category in which you can. You know who's done a really good job of this is the beer companies. I'm not promoting. By the way, we learn a lot of lessons about branding and marketing from people who have really bad products out there and services and reputations. Doesn't matter. They still have some branding skills. What's the number one beer in America? King of Beers, Budweiser. The first name that comes to your mind in any product category is probably the leader in that category. So, along comes Miller, and what do? They say, we're going to be the first light beer. The Miller Light. Now, they own that new category, light. Others, Bud Light, you see it everywhere, but Miller Light apparently has the share because they were first. And so what you want to do in reality with your product or about your messaging is, if you have to, create a category which is fresh and new. One of my passions is to see every nation hospital in our nation and many hospitals throughout the world using barcode scanning at the bedside with patients. That means a patient has a barcoded wristband. I scan their wristband, and up comes their medication profile on my computer. I see what medications are due. I dispense those medications. I scan the medications for a match. I give it to the patient, and it's all documented. This isn't rocket surgery. We've been doing it for years at Target and the grocery store, the barcode scanning. But we can save hundreds of lives a year with barcode scanning. Over 7,000 people die from medication misadventures, preventable medication misadventures every year in the U.S. So it's a real passion of mine to get this done. And one of the things we do is we put on meetings to bring people together, just like Urbana does around this cause, we do over the cause of bedside barcoding. We have a movement going on in the nation. There were some meetings going on called summits, the summit on bedside barcoding. And we felt they really missed the mark. Summit was a good word, man. They stayed up there in the rarefied air and never got down to where we really lived. And we thought maybe we could do it and do it well. Well, how are we going to do another conference? We called ourselves the Unsummit on bedside barcode technology and practice. And we now have a really strong movement around that. Also, I might say it helps hold us accountable to say we're going to make sure that we get out of the clouds and down into the weeds where the people live. Kinds of words to search for. I'll go through this quickly. But when you're looking for a specific word, think of, as Jesus would have thought and the preacher would have thought, think of metaphors. Amazon. They didn't say a really big bookstore. They said Amazon. Tide, the ocean washing in. Monster.com. A gopher is a technology. Well, you know, when you go to the cleaners and they have that carousel that brings your shirts to the person behind the counter, instead of going for the shirts, those things bring the shirt to them. Why not call it a gopher instead of a conveyor belt? Unusual name, Mozilla. I love Mozilla. Yahoo. They could have called it any number of things, but we know those names. You borrow from other languages. That's another language. Aqua Joe, caffeinated water. That's supposed to be, that's so good. It's Kairos, a typo there, sorry. Kairos, we came up with the word Kairos, which there's two kinds of time. There's chronos, which is chronological, and there's kairos, which is this intersection where God just brings everything together. And kairos is a crossing or an intersecting. And we called this organization, instead of the New Christian Businessmen's and Women's Organization, it's called a kairos. And it's stuck, and it works. People can talk about what it is. Play with words. Ethics. We put just a simple X on the end. Kleenex did it. The word clean, they misspelled it on purpose and then put the X on the end. I have a lot of typos. Vivid picture words like red hat, Firefox, white leaf design, zebra. If you were a barcode company, wouldn't you like to be called zebra? There is one. They have it, and it's smart. And they show the zebra. Portions of words, man. Okay. I didn't have spell check on. There's a group downstairs in the business section called Integra, short for integrity. Intel, intelligent. Talus, catalyst. What time are we supposed to be done?
Oh, we got 10 minutes.
Yeah, good. Combinations of words and word parts. Expedia, a combination of words. Travelocity, Nextel, Accenture, Verizon. You can do this too. It's not just the geniuses. Avoid overused words and cliches. In my field, med is the worst possible word to use. There's med dispense, med accuracy, med cell, med depot, med everything. Multiple meanings can be powerful. Open for business, I think, is great. What do you think it means, open for business? Why do you think they picked that? Why?
One, to open your minds to God. Two, It's a way of saying, hey, look, we're ready to start a business, so why not look into opening it? Maybe multiple people.
Yeah, or we're open for business.
Countries that are open for business, not missionaries.
There you go.
Another
application. Did you have a different one?
I was going to say it's an exciting experiment.
Yeah.
What about
I don't know. And you know what? He raises the thing. What about potential conflict? This is one of the things that you really have to be aware of. This is one of the reasons why it makes it so hard to come up with the right words. Because everything's been thought of and everything's been taken. Come up with a name and the domain name's not available. And so you have to come up with some extra thing. Believe me, New Inchwander is available, I grab. But... And then slogans and sayings are trademarked besides. So you, that really filters things out and makes it tougher. And then enlist the eyes and ears of outsiders. Attorneys that can do the searches to make sure you're not doing anything in violation. People that can say, are you, well, let me tell you, we had a, at our unsummit on bedside barcoding, we made a T-shirt about barcoding, and it says, BPOC, let's roll. And our friends on the East Coast said, nah, you can't do that. Because 9/11, that's what the guy said before the plane, saying you can't do it. We go, why? We don't mean that. Everybody uses that. But outside ears helped us see that we would have been offensive if we would have used it. So have outside ears. If you can afford it, get some good help from people who do this stuff. Let's wrap it up here with ethical branding now. And that's a good segue, because we don't want to do anything that's in violation of copyright, to be sure. Remember that what he wrote was upright and true. Be warned, my son, in anything in addition to them, that isn't true. Now, when all has been heard, here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it be good or evil. The first principle I'd say in regard to ethics, ethical branding, is forge your own branding iron. I don't know if that bothers you, but if I was Google, that would bother me. And I bet it does bother them. I don't know how you feel about this stuff, but this stuff just bugs the bejeebies out of me. When Christians take trademarked emblems and try and sell Jesus out of them, that's not what Christian branding is about. Nor is it simply coming up with anything and putting a little Ixthus on the bottom of your yellow page ad. I don't even want to go there. Forge your own branding irons. Make sure that they really are clean. I came up with an idea for a T-shirt once that when Toronto was going for the second World Series. I knew the Lakers, when they went for their third, they came up with the term three-peat. I thought, man, if I could make the right T-shirt, I could sell a bunch of them and have fun with it. And I came up with the T-shirt, just do it. Do being French for two. And I thought, hey, we're Canada, everything's bilingual, right? And I used the same font as Nike and everything else. Just do it. Just do it. So I called Nike, and I thought, man, they're going to be excited. They're going to want to be part of this. And the legal department says, if you want to put anything between just and it, our advice is just don't. And the very next month, FedEx had to drop it from their campaign. Because Nike said, no, anything between just and it. And, you know, I can understand now why. My boys and I came up with a slogan for T-shirts with the Seattle Mariners in 1991 when they won 116 games. They had this penchant for when they had two outs, they didn't quit, and they got more runs. We made a T-shirt just said, two outs, so what? We sold thousands of those T-shirts and had a blast. And then people started knocking them off. A little different version of it. And, you know, it's your intellectual property. So do unto others as you would have them do. All nomenclature should be true. Now, a lot of times, and not misleading, sometimes it's very subtle. Do you know how many Alka-Seltzer tablets you really need?
One.
You know why you do two? Two reasons. They didn't start packaging them in two until we started using them in two. And do you know why we start using them in two?
Plop, plop.
Plop, plop, fizz, fizz, oh, what a relief it is. And subliminally, they got us to do all that. It's better to under-promise and over-deliver. We should remain faithful to our brand covenants. I'm going to suggest to you that a brand is really a covenant. Habitat for Humanity is a social contract with the world that they're going to do what their brand says they're going to do. Some people are not so explicit with their brand. Kinko's is a brand that you don't know what they do in the beginning. But over time, they make a social covenant with you that they're going to be open 24 hours a day and give you service at the lowest price. And I don't know what's happened to that. But when there is a disconnect there, And think of it, a brand really is. You're making a covenant with people. It's a good thing to keep our covenants. And so the process, I believe, ought to be a self-examined process. If we don't examine ourselves, someone else will. Ask Enron. It needs to be a God-examined process. And it is. He's the one who holds us accountable to every deed, whether it be good or bad. Every word, whether it be good or bad. And you know, the fact is our hearts are not upright and true. Annie Lamott says they're crooked little hearts. And so we can deceive ourselves, not just others. And we can actually deceive ourselves into thinking that we're not deceiving anyone when we really are. And so it's good to have a community of people around you who will be honest, and customers and internal people, and say, are we or aren't we matching our deliverables with our declaration, and deliverables? And then I would conclude by saying it needs to be, or it can and ought to be, a God-enabled process. These words, he says, these just the right words, they were given by one shepherd. You know, there have been an awful lot of sheep out there in the world that have been misled to slaughter by Madison Avenue, and maybe even by some of us in our promises. But the good shepherd is a good, this one shepherd is a good shepherd. And I would suggest to you that just when Jeff came to me a number of years ago and hinted that I might be helpful to him in the branding process, Dad, do you have any good ideas? You can imagine I was elated to help. And I want you to know that there is a good shepherd who wants you to succeed in business, the business that you're in, which is his business. And if you will but come and ask him, there's a real good chance that he will be interested and give you just the right words. Thanks. We don't have time for questions, I don't think, do we? I mean, I planned it that way. I don't.
I would say those of you who need to exit at this point, feel free to do so.
Sure. I'm here. Ask out loud so everybody can hear.
What do you suggest for someone that wants a brand, like a biblical name for a brand? Would it be too much considering there's so many biblical names that are used?
Okay, the question is, what do I think of biblical names? You know, this alabaster name, I think it's awesome. And they have that, we carry this treasure in earthen vessel. Now, who are they marketing to, alabaster? I don't think they're marketing to the people they serve. I think they're marketing to us who they are trying to rally to serve. Therefore, a biblical name can really be good there. There's no simple answer to that. To say, can I use a biblical name, should I use a biblical name, is saying, like, should I drive a car in my neighborhood? I don't know your neighborhood. If you live in the Amazon, you probably don't want to drive a car there. So it depends on the context. But biblical names can and do work. Matter of fact, some biblical words, they just happen to be Greek words, but are used by secular organizations effectively too. But if we use a biblical name, I'd say, boy, right out of the gate, we're putting our covenant out there a little stronger sometimes. And that can be good because that holds us accountable. It also communicates to the people we want to communicate to. Yes? Back in here somewhere. Yes?
How would you brand a church?
How would I brand a church? Again, you know, it really depends. The church that I served in Seattle was called the Westminster Chapel. And I love that word because people who were Presbyterian, and they kind of thought it was a Presbyterian church, but people who weren't, it just thought it was, you know, they didn't know. And chapel was more friendly than church or cathedral. Or the Crossroads Bible Church, we used to be the Crossroads Baptist Church, and they said, boy, we want people to know that we're not Baptists. We're biblical. So they really felt that was important. I'd say it really depends on who you're trying to reach, what your mission is. But I do think there's plenty of room for creativity. In Seattle, we have the Mars Hill Church, which is booming. And, you know, Mars Hill, I like that concept. Paul went up to Mars Hill and, you know, engaged with the pagans. And that's what they're doing. And they're bringing people to Christ effectively. So that holds them true to their mission. But I do think not enough thought goes into naming churches.
What's your thought on brands that are in totally different industries that are basically using the same name, but it's a totally different industry? It's not maybe a huge company that really protects their brand, so they're both operating with knowledge of each other.
Good. Everybody hear that? What do you think about brands that are they're the same brand, but they're just in different industries? And there certainly is a lot of that. Like, for example, ethics is .org, and then there's an ethics.com. And it doesn't have to do with our kind of ethics, but nevertheless, that name is used. The U.S. trademark law allows for names to be used in different categories. But the big boys, you don't count on using Coca-Cola for anything, or Amazon. And so I'd say if it's available and it's clean in your specific industry and it doesn't interfere with any of your competitors, then, there's a real good reason to use that sometimes. But I think the person who tries to use a name that belongs to somebody else sometimes is the one who really gets hurt, and not the one whose name we're using.
To what degree is it, I guess, ethical to create sort of a cultural identity where you're identifying yourself with this brand, like people identify themselves with Apple, like I'm an Apple user? I mean, as a Christian, I mean, we should be concerned with relationships and authentic things, so, but at the same time, you want people to identify with your brand and say, yeah, I'm this sort of, you know, person or whatever. So, because I read Primal Branding, and it's all about, you know, creating identity thing, but I don't know.
Yeah. In the book of Ecclesiastes, like in all of the Bible, there are sayings, there are real clear-cut didactic commands, and then there are just some real fuzzy suggestions. Not unlike street signs, a stop sign and a yield sign. I know what to do when there's a stop sign. When there's a yield sign, that calls for wisdom. And what you're doing, I mean, I like the question you're asking, because you're getting down and testing your motives in there and saying you really want to be pure. You don't want to drink the Kool-Aid of the world and deceive yourself that you're not deceived. So, beyond that, I'd have to say I can't give quickly a more thoughtful answer than that, except to say that those are the kinds of things that you always want to ask. And sometimes I think churches are in danger of doing that. You know, drink the Kool-Aid was a real good analogy that I just used, because Jim Jones got a whole church to buy into his brand of Christianity and to his lifestyle. And it's a good thing to grapple with.
Your book, example of ministry, that aspect. I mean, it's a question that they actually have not enough nature yet. The local church wants to support them. And then you get close to different focus on that sort of deal.
And is that a question? I'm sorry.
Kind of a
comment?
I mean, yeah. I mean, you and I agree. All, you know, all campus and for the aspects.
You know, a thought that comes to my mind with, and I'm going to extend where you've been here, but of competing ministries, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, but you have Campus Crusade for Christ, and you have InterVarsity Christian College. If I was on staff at Campus Crusade for Christ years ago, and I've always been real comfortable in both groups. There are some people who are just comfortable in one and not the other. And that's fine. If we were all the hand, remember that message? So, you know, God does make us unique. I do think that there are certain, and I've been talking to my kids about this sometime, who are with me, there are certain characteristics about inner varsity. There's certain flavors to it, certain emphases. This is one of them, this whole thing of the creation mandate, work, and business's mission, and so on, that you don't find quite the same way in Campus Crusade for Christ. And in Campus Crusade for Christ, you find this zeal to bring everybody you ever meet to Christ. And it's a beautiful zeal. And so it's not that one is right and one is wrong. And there's people in inner varsity, a lot of them, that have that same zeal for bringing people to Christ. And there's people in Campus Crusade that have that business's mission thing. But it's kind of like people who want safety when Volvo sells safety, but they also sell real nice cars, comfortable cars, and pretty colors and all that. It's not just safety that you buy, but they kind of pick something that it differentiates them, and it does then draw a community that has some connection. And the fact is, we can talk all we want about a heterogeneous one world community of faith, and yet the hand is a hand, and this hand is not always with this hand. It respects this hand and it works with this hand, but it isn't always this hand. We all can't be the eye.
Any comments on using a verb as a brand? I mean, seems like most people don't do that.
Well, I tell you, the one I love was SIM. The ad in the newspaper said feed. I thought that was four letters, and you have no question what that means. Feed, period. It's a command. It's a verb. It's not a noun. It's not chicken feed. It's feed. So I think verbs are strong. One more? Okay.
The Ned campaign, what we came up with that, do you have any ability to strain about making that statement about
About what?
If the slogan said something along the lines of the favorite
America's most populous school assembly?
Yeah. Do
you have a problem with that?
Do you have any?
No, we did. We grappled with that. We didn't say America's best school assembly. We didn't say it's the number one. It's just a fact. It's the most popular. By popular demand, it comes back. And I grappled with that whole thing of one of the ethical things is humility. And certainly I would say never, never, never do we brand at the expense of putting people down so we can build ourselves up in any kind of a negative way. But you get borderline when you start getting boastful. And we tried to be real careful with that. And you know, maybe you couldn't have done that, and I appreciate that and I understand. But we felt comfortable with that because it was just a simple fact. Hey, it's America's most popular school.
Oh, so they already didn't have a very
last. Oh, yeah. They've seen 12 million kids since they started. There's no one that comes near them in the number of kids that they reach. Okay, well, I'll stick around up here, and I'd love to hear anything you have to say as well as ask. But thanks so much for being there.